Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're at Yeshayahu chapter 29, Ariel. Now we'll find out where Congregation Ariel got their name from. This is a prophecy about the kingdom of Yehuda. And the kingdom of Yehuda was centered around the Beit HaMikdash. That was basically the focal point of Yehuda, is the temple. And the name that he gives for it, the temple, is called Ariel, which means the Lion of God. It's called the Lion of God. And it was very frustrating to the prophet that the Jewish people would not behave the way they should. But it was one thing, the 10 tribes, we got used to the idea that the 10 tribes were going to be lost, that they had sinned. But the tribe of Yehuda was the pious tribe. That was the tribe around the temple. They were supposed to be much stronger. And when they had a spiritual decline, it was very difficult, very hard to imagine that the tribe of Yehuda, the tribe that was, you know, very pious and very dedicated, that even they would eventually have to go into exile. The difference was the 10 tribes went into exile and they eventually assimilated. But Yehuda went into exile and realized that they had goofed, and they did teshuvah, and it ended up being that was part of Hashem's mission. We're from, by and large, we're Jews because we come from Yehuda. We may come from some of the other tribes, but the vast majority of Jewish people you meet today come from the tribe of Judah, from Yehuda. So he was trying to prevent the downfall of Yehuda. And again, it must have been frustrating. It's one thing, the 10 tribes, there was idol worship, there were other things. But how did the Yehuda, what happened to them? So it's really fascinating when you think about it, because we run into this today where you'll have people that are religious Jews, and you might say, well, if you're religious, doesn't that do it all? And it doesn't always do it all. In other words, you could have a person that keeps kosher and he keeps Shabbos, but that's not enough. He could be lacking in many ways. And that's really who he's speaking to, is the tribe of Yehuda that might be doing the observances. But we're going to find out that if observances are done in a wrong way, they can be hollow. And to some extent, the observant community, the challenge that we have, the reason why there are reform and conservative and none, is because at some point the people looked at the more observant people and said that this isn't it. This doesn't do it for us. There's that they, it was lacking somehow, and therefore they went looking for a Judaism without observance, or less observance, or a different type of observance. And so it's an important lesson that a person has to, you know, that observance is a tool, in other words, of getting close to Hashem, but it's not the whole. The Hashem gave, when Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah, there were 2 tablets. There was between man and man, and there's between man and God. And if you only have one without the other, it's not Judaism. So just like the person that doesn't do, he might be a nice person and he's charitable, but he doesn't keep the Shabbat, and he doesn't follow the laws between man and Hashem, he's not keeping Judaism. So too, if you don't work on Shabbos and you don't eat pork, but you're not a good person, you're arrogant, you're haughty, you're whatever it is, that's also not Judaism. And so a person has to, the ideal world is to be observant, but to have the observance have real meaning to them, not to be shallow, not to be hollow, that they change a person. And what we're going to see is, and it's actually quite famous, the lesson that is going to be mentioned here, is that people perform observances out of habit. They don't necessarily do it because they realize it's Hashem's word and it's supposed to make me a better person and it's going to change my life. And they do it because their father did it, their mother did it, and this is how they've always done it. But if you do it out of habit and it doesn't have any real meaning, then it doesn't always accomplish what it needs to accomplish. Men that put on tefillin every morning, they put on their undershirt too. They, after a while, they just The bar mitzvah boy, the first time he puts on tefillin, he can't believe it. He's holy. He's joined the club. He's wearing the medals of Hashem on himself next to his heart and his head. And he declares that the first time, it's like a very special experience to put your tefillin on. People go to the kosel to do it. And you know what? By 6 months later, he's whining, just like he ties his shoes, he's tying his tefillin. It's just a habit. And when something is just a habit, so we happen to believe that you should do things out of habit, it's better than not doing them. But if you just do it out of habit, it becomes hollow. You have to, it's almost like, you'll get a, my family, we send Mother's Day cards, right? Or you have to, your mother, right? But if you're just doing it because you got to do it and there's no meaning behind it, then it's very shallow. Better shallow than nothing. But if, on the other hand, a person really means it, wants to show their mom how important they are, and they write the hand note, or they send something, or they do it in a... They're not just doing it because if they don't do it, they're in big trouble. They do it because their mother really is important to them. That's a Mother's Day. It's a funny example that I'm giving. But the idea, though, is that certain things that we do are just habit. It's almost like when somebody says thank you. Why do they say thank you? It's just a habit. They didn't really mean it. And then there are other people that say thank you. They really mean it. And it means something if they said thank you. Because they show the way their body language, or they show they really do appreciate it. Other people, they say thank you, and it doesn't. They're not really grateful. That doesn't mean anything to them. They don't show that they appreciate what you did for them. And so the lesson of not being shallow, of not doing something out of habit, that's going to be the lesson of what happened to Yehuda. They initially stuck with all the mitzvahs. They had the temple and they brought the offerings just like they were supposed to, but they became hollow. They just became habits. And when something becomes a habit, you have to be careful with it. It loses some of its meaning. And that's going to be the lesson that is going to come out of this chapter. And it's one of the themes that you'll find in every yeshiva or in every synagogue. At some point, the rabbi will try to speak on that, because we're prone to that. We do things. Sometimes we do things because we're excited. Again, it's the Mother's Day card. You do it because you got to do it, but you mean it. It's so much different when you really mean it and you show the meaning. I'm not saying you shouldn't send the card. You shouldn't make the phone call. But if you can find a way to put real meaning into things rather than just out of habit, it makes all the difference in the world. And that's going to be the lesson of what happened here. So let's see. He's very upset. He gives it a hoy. If you remember, the hoys are the big hoys. Hoy! Whoa! Now, he calls it the Lion of God. Why was the... what is the Lion of God? Some people say it refers to Yerushalayim. Most people say, I'm looking at the commentary called the Masudos, he says it refers to the altar. The fire. The fire on the altar was described of the Lion of God. And what would happen is that the fire would come down, like from heaven, and then it would spread out, just like a lion, like when a lion crouches. At first you see the front of the lion, and then it then comes the back, the whole body of the lion. In other words, it starts out a little bit. You just see like the head of the lion, and then within seconds later, the paws and the lion. Apparently, when the lion first it crouches, you just see the front of it, and then it brings all of its body weight to attack or on top of the. So there's the idea that the fire, the offering that comes from Hashem, first you have this little fire, and then that fire spreads. It's almost like that there's the idea that the spark of Hashem, the enthusiasm of Hashem, comes down in this one place, and from this place it spreads out to the whole world. And we have a tradition that the world was a different kind of world. The fruits, once the temple was destroyed, the food didn't taste as good. Things didn't happen. It's not the same kind of world without that fire. And we don't have a temple, so we can't relate to it in the same way, but it was a different kind of existence. There were Jews who wanted to just commit suicide after the temple was destroyed. There's no purpose to life. Which to us, we say, what do you mean there's no way? We've got so many others. No, they couldn't conceive that experience of connecting to Hashem and the feelings that they felt and the enthusiasm and the... we have a challenge. We daven three times a day and we make brachos all the time, and we don't always get enthused. they, when they went to the temple, they, there was something that happened to them. It had meaning to them. A person who was a sinner, who had strayed, would come to the temple, and they would leave a different person. And they looked different, they felt different, they acted different. It was a life-changing experience. So, again, we don't know how exactly why or what. We just know that it happened, that people that having that ability to... we are aware in our own lives, sometimes we get depressed, sometimes we don't feel like doing certain things. A person could go to the temple in Beis HaMikdash and rejuvenate. They could get that spark, they could get that enthusiasm, they could feel that love towards their fellow Jew. We don't have that today, or we can't duplicate that. But that was the fire of Hashem. There were some people who used that as a crutch. And there are people that use religion as a crutch. In other words, they say to themselves, well, I keep the Sabbath, I don't eat pork, so that means I can do whatever I want in other areas. In other words, because I'm good in this area, that allows me to be take license to do things in other areas. And then it comes out then that what you call a good deed is actually a bad deed. It's almost like somebody that commits a crime and gives the money to charity. So he thinks, as long as I give the money to charity, it's okay. And so as long as I... The people of Yehuda, they felt as long as they had this fire of Hashem, they could misbehave because, well, of course, they had Hashem's house. They had Hashem's altar, so that was a license to them that they didn't have anything to worry about, and that itself was a problem. So let's see what he says. Hoy, Ariel, Ariel. Whenever they say something twice, it's for extra emphasis. Whoa, the Lion of Hashem, the Lion of Hashem. In other words, the huge power that exists within the altar to inspire people, unfortunately, at this point, the people were experiencing a downfall. Kiryat, this word Kiryat is the encampment. They use that in Israel today for like a large city. They call it a Kiryat, like a Kiryat Arba, Kiryat Shmona. Yeah, it means, I'm not sure in modern Hebrew how they would translate it, like a settlement maybe, or a encampment, or a place, but it means like a large area. Chana David. This was the place of David, where David HaMelech resided, and David was he was the hero of the ten of Yehuda. He was the king. He was the father of our country. Whenever we look to somebody to as one of our all-time greats, there was no question that it was David HaMelech. He was, he had the pious love for Hashem that he put in the Sefer Tehillim and his dedication to the people. So this was his capital. This was the city of David. This was the area of David. But what was the problem? If they were still in they still had the temple, and they still were the city of David. The problem was Safu Shana Ashana. The people did it year to year, and it became a habit. They got bored with it. Chagim Yinakfu. And the holidays were empty. They were going to be, they weren't what they used to be. And Batzikosi L'Ariel. And Hashem wanted at first to warn us that we were losing it, so he sent our enemies against us. V'haisa Taniya, and he brought on suffering. And there was Taniya V'Aniya. That expression we have in the Kinos. Mourning and mourning. But so he just says moaning and mourning. It's the same. You'll be afflicted and like it'll be bad. And sometimes something is bad, but a person just handles it. It doesn't affect them. And then sometimes it's bad, and they're moaning from the. In other words, because of Taniya, the Aniya, that because of the affliction of the moaning, you'll be moaning. Vaiseli Kariel. And it'll be, it'll afflict the kingdom of Ariel. V'chanisi kador ha'alecha. And the enemy will come against the kingdom of Yehuda. Now, just historically, they almost were destroyed many years before they were destroyed. That was like the warning sign. If you remember, Sancheirib came with all of his armies. He was the superpower. And he was the one who destroyed the 10 tribes. And little Yehuda was going to be next. That was going to be the easy fight. And he came with 185,000 men and encamped around Yerushalayim. And he started a siege. And there was very little hope. They were outnumbered. and they were out. If the 10 tribes who were strong and mighty were defeated by Sancheirib, of course Yehuda would be defeated. And the people didn't know what to do. They really felt like this was the end. And Pesach night there was a plague, and most of the army didn't wake up, and the rest ran away. That's what happened. We sing about it in the second part of the Haggadah that most of us are not awake for. It's really an amazing story. But so he's saying that he's describing what happened. That the first Hashem was kind of the. Sometimes a person has like a close call, or they get like a second lease on life, and that's really their chance. You know, then they promise, "I'll be better if only get the chance." And so then things clear up, and then that's the opportunity. Well, this is what happened here. The enemy came against us. The Sartilahi siege, Mutsa Vekimose Lemetzoros. They had all kinds of things around the city to stop the water from going in, and they threw rocks in the city. Verse 4. So at first the people felt everything was lost. The Shefalti Me'oretz, the people were so low down, they were lower than the ground. That's how depressed they were. Hard to be lower than the ground, right? That's what the Hebrew is. V'shefalti me'oretz. They were shuffle. They were low to the Jewish people. They to Dabur. What happened is that there were many Jews that were on the side of Sancheirib, who he had conquered, and he had the Jews in his army, and he had them announce in Hebrew that there was no use in fighting, and they should give up. And the king's officers asked him not to speak so loud because the people were hearing, and it was just very depressing, this situation. And again, being lower than earth is pretty and you speak from the dust. The necromancers used to speak from the dirt, from the ground. I don't know if like the voice came from the ground, but he's just describing the people were like low to the ground. They were so low at that time. Kolech mafim reset titzapti. The people were like chirping. The prophets, they paint a very colorful picture always. It's just we've lost over time. We don't really get the, you know, speaking from the dust and the chirp and the maybe it's like the crickets were in the dust where they chirp from the ground. But basically, we weren't able to lift up our head. We had so little hope at this point. We had given up, and we really thought that the worst was going to happen. And what did happen? Verse 5, the nations that came around, they were pulverized. They were just totally wiped out. Kamotz over. They were like chaff. Hamon, Aritim, Vahayu, Pesa. And it happened all of a sudden. They went like overnight from afraid of a siege and a total destruction with no hope. They went to, the enemy was defeated. Me'im Hashem Tzvacha, and this came from Hashem, who is the real power, not the superpower of the nation, but the power, real power, comes from Hashem. And Hashem came, Baram, Barash Gadol, Sufa, Sara, with earthquakes and fires and storms. Lahav, Eish Loka, all of nature came out against this country that tried to destroy us. Then when the people woke up and the nation was gone, it was like we're waking up from a dream. All of those nations that encamped, of hundreds and thousands of armies that came against us, the all of the enemies, they just disappeared. So did all the problems get solved? So we have a tradition that Hashem made a miracle, but we didn't quite use the miracle in the right way. It expresses it that the king was a righteous king at that time, Chizkiyahu, that he didn't sing Shira, he didn't sing songs of praise, they didn't acknowledge enough what Hashem had done for them. But it was a good try. In other words, it was an opportunity that was lost. But they said if we had acted appropriately, the Mashiach could have come, because it was such an experience after facing all those enemies surround us and see them just disappear and become pulverized that we almost made it. It's an interesting metaphor here. Verse 8. Bayukasha Yachlam Arab. It's like a person who dreams and he's hungry and he dreams that he's eating the hekits and he wakes up. And he's not full. He's not full because he was just dreaming. A person's thirsty and he's dreaming of drinking. And he's very thirsty when he wakes up. All of those nations that had gathered against us were. It was like a dream. They were gone. Now, verse 9. Hismamu v'hismamu. Again, the Hebrew is very interesting. His mahamu usmahu, stop and wonder. His tashishu v'show, think about it, see and don't be blind. Shikru, people were drunk but not from wine. No, they were like reeling but not from low shaker, they didn't drink anything. The other nations, like they you could imagine when all their sons and brothers and leaders just disappeared. You know, it's just like they couldn't believe it. They were like they were like drunk. Ki nasach aleichem Hashem ruach tardeima. Hashem caused them to be asleep. The yatzam etzeinechem, they closed their eyes. As the neviim ves roshechem chozim kisa, the people just didn't see, even the prophets. 11. Vatihi lechem chazos hakol kedivre haseper achosim. And it's like it was a sealed book. Like the people didn't know how to react. It's like if you give a book and you can't read, and you give it to somebody who can read. Lemer karanaza, please read this. And he says, I can't read it. It's sealed. The people like didn't get the message. They didn't know what to do with it. They knew that there was an anger against them and they were depressed, but they couldn't get their way out. 12. And Itana Sefer, Allah Sher Lo Yada Sefer, Lamer, and then you bring it to someone else. He says, I can't read it either. And so the people, they were doing, he's referring to Yehuda after the miracle happened and the enemy was defeated. They knew that there needed to be a response. They knew that Hashem had been angry with them. They knew that this was the warning bell. But they were like in a stupor. They couldn't wake up. And they would, there was a message, but they didn't know what the message is. Nobody could tell them the message. It's very frustrating when you know there's a message and you can't get it. This is the verse 13, that really, you'll hear this phrase at the end of the verse. The Yomar Hashem, so finally the prophet came. Sometimes if people don't get the message, Hashem is going to teach them clearly. And Hashem said, Yan ki niga sha'amazeh b'pivu sfasav. You know why this happened? Because the people, they do everything, they say it with their mouth, they say the words, Uvasvasav kavduni, and in their lips, they honor me. They say thank you, they praise me, Velibo rachach mimeni. But their heart isn't there. They go to shul, they worship, they do the rituals, but their heart isn't in it. Vati yirasam osi, and their fear, mitzvahs anashim ilamado. It's just habit. He says it's like a command that's been taught. They're robots. They're just robots. They just do it because they always did it. There are people that feel that what had happened was that the vast majority of Jews that came to America were observant. And once they got here, their religion disappeared. In other words, they settled down and they assimilated very quickly. Millions of Jews that came to America were like that. And most of us, you know in our own families that are, you know, we know the great-grandparents that came over and they were observant and they were super observant. Everybody you meet, my grandfather was a rabbi, he was a shochet, it's incredible. Everybody you meet has somebody like that who came over. Yet, within a short amount of time, their children just totally lost it all. And the experience of Jew was not like that. That it used to be if you had Jews, even one or two in a village, they kept it up. Whereas in America, it just fell out the window. So some people said that the people that came over, they were observant outwardly, but it was just out of habit. They grew up in the little villages of Poland and Russia for thousands of years, hundreds of years, not that, hundreds of years, and they got used to doing things, and then they came to America and it was different, and they just also became different. Now, it's not for us to judge it. Some people feel that because of the wars, there was no education going on, meaning that World War I cut through the path of what they call the Pale of Settlement, mm-hmm. and there were 2 million Jews that were refugees. And the war took 5 years, And so literally there was a whole class of all the yeshivas closed down and everybody was drafted, and there was no the people kept on the commandments the way they could, but they really didn't understand them. You used to ask a Jew, why do you do this? Well, my father did it, or the tradition, right? And you know, like fiddler on the roof, like, why do we do it? It makes no sense whatsoever. When you play music, you have to be able to focus on the music, right? You have to totally, so, but try fiddling on a roof. It just doesn't go, but you do it because of tradition, right? That's the, that, but it's not that. You do it because there's meaning to it. Because we get close to Hashem, because we become better people. But people had started doing things just out of habit, and their hearts weren't there. Mm-hmm. And so that's the challenge. The challenge is to do something with your heart. So there were different movements, like the Hasidim, they tried to create a movement which would put their heart into Judaism, the original Hasidic movement. You know, the Baal Shem Tov, and you know, the simple Jew who loves Hashem with all of his heart, and it has so much meaning. Then you had the Musar movement, also tried the same. These were European movements, but there's no question that you have to find a way that people connect to religion, not just to get them to do it, but to get them to serve Hashem with their heart. And when you say the Shema, you say you love Hashem with all your heart. We all say those words, but some of us, we just do the mitzvahs, but we don't really, our hearts aren't there. And this is a challenge to us. I get scared to read the words, because, you know, I'm like everybody. Sometimes I daven and my heart isn't there. Especially in the morning, I'm still sleepy. It's the, but that's the challenge, is this verse here. We say the words. Now, obviously, it's better to say the words than not. If you don't say the words, not only isn't your heart there, your mouth isn't there either. But you got to say the words, and try not to be far away from Hashem. And this word milamuda is like a person was taught it, but he's just doing it because that's the habit. That's the way he was taught. And this is actually the name of the subject you'll hear. It's called Mitzvah Sanashim Melumda. People commands that people do out of habit, not out of conviction. So what's going to happen then? What's going to be if the people continue to do this? Verse 14. And this is also a famous verse because of the word he's going to use. L'chein, hinini Yosef l'hafliya samazah. So you think the last close call was the end? You ain't seen nothing yet. You know, the Jewish people, we've been through a lot. You know, we've been through exile, we've been through we got kicked out of Spain, and we had the pogroms, and we had, and now we've been, we thought we'd seen it all, and then we saw a Holocaust, which was unbelievable. No one ever experienced anything like that before. So that's what really Hashem is saying here, that unless you serve Hashem out of conviction, Hashem is trying to wake us up. Hineni Yosef lahafli esamazah. I'm going to, the English on here is I don't know what he's thinking. Mine says to perform obscurity. I don't know what that means. No idea. I'm going to make a wonder on the people. Hafla v'fela. So this is it's a Yiddish expression. Hafla v'fela means like you won't believe this. A super duper. Pella is a wonder, and hafla v'fela is a wonder of wonders. So sometimes somebody will say, like in Hebrew, like hafla v'fela is like awesome and amazing. So like you might say to somebody, how was it? It was hafla v'fela. You won't believe it. It was unbelievable. Hafla v'fela. It was like he calls it obscurity upon obscurity. I have no idea. Does anybody have a better translation?
Wonder upon wonder.
Wonder upon wonder is much better. Yeah, that's what yours calls it. Wonder upon wonder.
They call it concealment.
No, that's the way.
That's as bad as
mine was even a marvelous work and a wonder.
Oh, okay, that's good. My understanding of the word pella means a wonder.
Yeah.
A wonder of wonder. I just this particular chant, he just uses the word obscurity, and I just don't know where that the Matsudos is that he says plia rabba, like an amazing wonder. That's the way that Matsudos says. Let me just see. But you'll hear that. I'm not sure if it's a more of a modern thing or a Yiddishism, but you'll hear the hafla v'fela. How was it? You won't believe it. It was amazing. It was incredible. Wonder of wonders. It's hafla v'fela. That's these two words.
Marvelous.
Yeah, marvel of marvels, yeah. Then there's the second half of the verse. What was going to be this big tragedy? So the Jewish people was always been considered a wise people. And we're the people of the book. That's the one thing that we've cultivated. Even though we're a wise people, Hashem was going to make the wisdom go lost. Abdul Chachmas Chachamav, the wisdom of the wise is going to disappear. The people that should have been wise weren't wise. This is like, you know, we all rely on the professionals or the experts. What happens when the experts goof? Where was the, you know, these are people that should know much better, but the wisdom of the wise, you have great people that make such simple mistakes sometimes, you know, like the, where, what were they thinking? V'avda chachmas chachamas. Sometimes, for whatever reason, sometimes we look at a person and we wonder, why didn't they do this? This would have solved all, and somehow that answer, that solution never came to them. They just weren't able to think. The wisdom goes lost. Ubinas Navonov, now the wisdom is one thing, but what about Bina? What about understanding? That also, Tistaser, will be hidden. Some people feel like in the Holocaust there were people, they thought the Germans, they didn't realize that the Germans were going to harm them. They thought the Germans were better than the Russians. They thought they could bribe them the way Jews have always gone, you know, dealt with their enemies. They thought if they work hard and they're part of the war effort, that would save them, and that didn't help. In other words, the wisdom that somehow there were people who had a chance to run away and they didn't. There were people in Germany that after Hitler published a book that he was going to wipe out the Jewish people and that we were the enemy of mankind, he came to power and the people had a chance to leave and they didn't. What happened to their wisdom? These were smart. And in fact, the people that left were the people that had nothing to lose, who had no property and had no position. They were easy to pick up and go. But the people who were successful, they couldn't bring themselves to leave because they had their careers and they had their businesses, and they just somehow they didn't see it. Their wisdom went lost. Not judging them, but that's what happened. That there were people who should have known, who should have seen the handwriting on the wall, and should have gotten out while they still could, and they just didn't because
they had status and they thought that would protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was so short-sighted kind of thing.
Yeah, so this is the word. Like sometimes Hashem takes away a person's wisdom, mm-hmm. and a person says to himself, "Why didn't I do this?" And I know people that sometimes will say to a person who has something happen to them, why didn't you do this? And that makes the person feel terrible. How do you explain that solution didn't come to you? I mean, afterwards, we can always be backseat drivers, you know. Oh, why didn't you think of doing this? I couldn't think of anything. All I could think to do was... So we dive into Hashem that when things happen, that we come up with the right solution. Because wisdom ultimately comes from Hashem. And when Hashem wanted to punish us, the wisest people didn't have that wisdom. It went lost. And that's all in this verse, on verse 14, which is where we're going to stop, because we're getting to another hoy. That's a different theme. A different hoy. So the one thing I would just say is, though, that it differentiates between this sin and the sins of Ephraim, which were like drinking and partying. There are different things that get different people. There's some people that go lost because they're into drugs, they're into alcohol, they're into the party scene. They get too involved in the creature comforts. And then there are other people that aren't necessarily drunk and into the party scene, but they just there's no depth. They're doing things out of habit. They're not, you know, that's the difference between the 10 tribes and what happened in Yehuda.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.